Hey, cool kids. Welcome to this Raves Indie Radar bonus episode, which is my chat with one of my favorite bands right now, Nation of Language from Brooklyn. I was back in my college town in Madison, Wisconsin. I got to see them at the High Noon Saloon. The arrangement was to chill and chat with them after the show, and I was praying that it would be a good show because it makes it so much easier. They were great, and as you're about to hear, they're really good people.
I'm really glad you guys continued your tour. For example, you guys played a Pixies cover tonight.
Yeah.
And the Pixies canceled their tour. But you guys hung in. Was there a time when you guys were saying maybe we shouldn't do this because of COVID and safety?
There was always that sort of floating in the background of like, will we have to cancel this? But ultimately, we left it up to essentially ensuring that COVID precautions were in place for the shows, like whether it's negative test mandates, vaccine mandates. Usually it's a combination of the two of them, or like an either-or situation. But generally, like if the bands we were touring with felt good, and the venues felt good, and we felt good, now's the time. Let's get back out and go as, you know, as long as we can. Because when everything shut down the first time, we were 3 days into a tour. It was going to be a whole national tour, and all of a sudden, it was like, all right, we got to go home. We've been, like, just dying to get back out. And so having the opportunity, we just basically jumped at it.
Yeah, definitely. I would say before the pandemic hit, we felt like playing live shows was the way that we could connect with people. And it was very important to us to be able to present the music in that way, because it's very different from the recorded version of the music, as you probably noticed tonight. So not being able to show people that side of the band for so long was really difficult. Yeah, we were itching to get back out. I'm really glad that we did.
You know, a lot of bands, and I've talked to managers, I've talked to booking agents, I keep hearing how hard it is to be on the road during COVID, right? Mm-hmm. So you guys probably have a lot of restrictions, things you can't do. Mm-hmm. What kind of rules are you guys living by?
Basically, just whenever we're not on stage, wearing masks. And aside from that, we basically, a lot of the drives are so long that there's not even much chance to be interacting with that many people anyway. And so, yeah, it's just basically masks on. Like, we still come out and, like, talk to the people after the show, but I'd say 70% of the time they're wearing masks as well. Yeah, basically just staying as safe as possible, but
yeah, our manager was hopeful that we, I'm not trying to dig on him, but he, for our safety, was hoping that we wouldn't go out and talk to people after the shows. He was like, leave it to our tour manager, leave it to the tour manager. We really want to be there talking to people. We couldn't say no.
I was hanging out there as you guys were talking to your fans, which I think is a great idea. You talked to every last person that wanted to talk to you. And everybody was masked. That's the policy.
Right.
And it felt completely safe. And for anybody who's wondering, we're sitting outside the venue at a picnic table right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're all being good. You toured with the Wombats, which I think was really effective. What were those shows like? And were there some other bands you opened for that you think have turned out to be very important for you up to this point?
Those Wombat shows were incredible. Before that, our tours were booked by me, self-booked, and all of our shows had been pretty small, fairly small DIY shows, mostly local. So being able to go on that national tour with a band that brings in so many like really adoring fans who like show up early no matter who the opener is, that was crucial to getting our names out there, because you know those people were lined up at the stage waiting like the moment doors opened. So we had people to play for every night. That was key. We were so grateful for that tour.
Interesting how some bands have that and some bands don't.
Yeah.
So if you're going to open for somebody, you always want to have somebody that's got that fan base. And hopefully you've got a manager and an agent who can kind of detect that.
Yeah, definitely. When we were on our Adam Green tour, those fans were really receptive as well. And the kind of people like the fans we have now who want to talk after the show and kind of get to know the musicians. So we met a lot of people on those 3 nights that we got to play with Adam as well, and that was great.
I was talking with Ian a little bit before we got started about the Brooklyn music scene, and it's interesting because I've been hearing it's very cutthroat, very, very competitive. I mean, bands like the Drums, when they were breaking, would say, oh, you know, this is really, really difficult in Brooklyn. But it sounds like maybe you guys have had a little more love from other bands over there, or maybe not. Tell me, what's the Brooklyn music scene like now?
I find it to be very supportive, but that's what I try and put out. And
foster.
So, like I was talking before, how, you know, being on tour with The Wants and being on tour with Public Practice, we all kind of released records right as the pandemic started, and each of us kind of got cheated out of being able to tour it and get the full experience that, you know, one is supposed to have when you put out a record. We were fortunate enough to be able to put this tour together, and it was like, who do we want to bring? It's like, well, we want to bring The Wants because they didn't get to tour their record. We want to bring Public Practice. They didn't get to tour their record. And we can all kind of share and celebrate in this together. And I mean, there's definitely a competitive nature to the New York music scene in general, I think. But to me, it's more like a fun kind of competition. Like, I am competitive with other bands, but I still want them to succeed, and like, I want us all to come up together. And
we have all these like dreamy fantasies about when we're on our like fifth album and we're writing our memoirs and we're like, yeah, remember when like
we used to hang out with,
we would hang out with like Lydia from Gustav, and people would be like, what, they knew Lydia from Gustav?
Like, that's a good band.
That's a sick band.
Such a good band.
Yeah. So yeah, we love when we see other bands from our scene doing well, and we want to be a part of that scene.
The Brooklyn bands just continue to do really, really well. And I mean, you know, even who you have with you, The Wants, mm-hmm. Public Practice. So you have good taste in bands, I think.
Oh, thank you.
Now, you guys have an interesting strategy in that you don't often see a band, and you have another single coming very soon. Mm-hmm. You played it tonight. In relation to COVID and building an audience during COVID, it's been interesting to see you guys release a whole string of singles, and I have to mention, consistently good ones. I mean, everything you guys have put out, you've really been able to maintain a level well in front of your album, which is coming out next month. So tell me a little more about your whole strategy. You're even touring a little bit ahead of the album. You're going to be out for, what, a month or so?
Yeah.
Tell me what was behind all of this.
Well, it started for the first album. We pushed the release date. It was going to be in April of 2020. And then when COVID was happening, we're like, oh, we'll push it by a month. Like, that'll be sufficient.
and
we were wrong, but that allowed us to release two or three more singles in that time. Some of those ended up being kind of our most popular songs now.
Like The Wall and I.
Yeah, The Wall and I was like one of the last songs we put out, which we had never considered for being a single, like if we were going to be releasing the record on time. And that ends up being the song that most people, if they know one song by us, for most people that's the song. Mm-hmm. It's kind of acknowledging how music gets talked about and discovered in the modern era, where it's about social media feeds, it's about
Discover Weekly,
blog posts, playlists on streaming services. And you know, if you release two singles and then put out an album, that's three opportunities for people to write about you or talk about you or share the thing that you're putting out. If you release five singles and then the rest of the album, that's six opportunities. And so just kind of being in front of people as often as possible has worked really well for us. And
people sometimes give us guff about it, saying like, why don't you just release the album already? You've released half of it. Come on, just give it to us. But
for me, it's like the album is like, it's not going to come out any sooner than November. So for us, it was like, I'd rather start giving people songs sooner and like, then, you know, wait an extra 2 months and only put out a few singles.
Right.
I'm so excited for people to hear the music that I'm like, sure, like five singles? Sounds like a lot, but like if that means I can start putting them out next week, then let's do it.
And we're in a song world, a track world, yeah, right now, right?
Sure.
You know, the days of people lying on their back and listening to full albums and getting high, you know, there's not as much of that going on now, right? That was a generation or two ago. It seems like it's working really well for you. A Way Forward is coming out very soon now. It's going to come out in November. Tell me about the album.
In my mind, it's like part of the reason we wanted to release it so relatively soon after the first album was I feel like they sort of complement one another nicely, where the first album sort of lives mostly in sort of moodier, gloomy kind of vibe. And for the second album, there's a bit more optimism and celebration mixed in terms of sonically. This record is more indebted to kind of early 80s new wave. The second record explores a little more into late 70s krautrock and electronic music, almost like the influences of the first album's influences, like digging back in time. It's nice to be able to have these two albums be out so close together and
show the breadth and like depth of what we want Nation of Language
to be understood as. Right. Yeah. I think ideally I'd like to take some time before jumping back and making the third album. Wanting to sort of push out the ideas of how people would perceive Nation of Language in terms of not just being strictly sort of like an 80s new wave thing, that there were other elements to it as much as that is also, you know, a Powerball element.
I think people are definitely going to pick up on that. Now, you do have a new single coming out later this month, which you played tonight. Tell me about it, what's it called, and what's behind that tune?
It's called Grey Commute, The Great Commute.
Grey.
Sorry, it's called The Great Commute, and it's one of my favorite tracks from the album. I remember hearing the demo for the first time in our living room in our apartment where Ian writes all the music, and getting chills and just being like, this song has to be recorded perfectly. And I think they did a great job in the studio working on it. I'm really excited. I love playing it, having Ian pick up the guitar, which is something that never happens.
Terrifying.
But he's doing great, and I feel like it's really effective on stage as well. So I've loved playing it, and I can't wait for people to be able to listen to it all the time.
When Ian picks up the guitar, it's a new look. So when you run over to the synths, Ian, are you doing percussion stuff over there?
It's largely sort of either like little synth riffs or ambient sounds, as well as also a lot of times it's messing with what Aiden's doing, so twisting knobs as she's playing so that the sound kind of morphs and gets more and more out of control. Because, you know, so many of the parts she's playing are sort of
constant.
Yeah, constant, like two-handed parts that it's fun to be able to go over and just like mess with her as she's like, as she's stuck like drilling these like repeating sort of arpeggio things. So yeah, it's a lot of like sound manipulation and then the occasional little riff or pad sort of ambient thing.
I'm still trying to grow two more arms so that he doesn't have to do that as often, but it's not working as hard as I try.
Looking at some of the other songs that I assume are going to be on the album, one of my favorites and also one of your most popular has been On Division Street. Mm. And Aiden, if you're the one that's on Twitter, and I told you at the time when it came out, I grew up 2 hours north of Division Street in the Chicago suburbs. That was me when I wrote to you and I said, is this the Chicago Division Street? No, we got one in Brooklyn, right?
Yeah, we got it in Manhattan. We get that question so often, and I always feel almost guilty letting people know. It's like when someone asks you what a song's about, and you tell them like what you were writing about when in the lyrics. Like, oh, it was about this girl, or it was about like these feelings of anger, and that's exactly the opposite of what they wanted it to be, and you feel so bad having revealed that to them and ruining it for them. Every time somebody asks if it's about the Division Street in Chicago, and I have to say no, I feel guilty, because I want them to be like, yes, that was my street.
Well, I mean, it's based on the Division Street in Manhattan, but I just loved the name of the street so much that I was like, I have to write this into a song. And so it's about any Division Street, but the fact that we also have a song called I've Thought About Chicago, whenever we, like, when we played there last night, everyone's like, so what's with the whole Chicago thing? I really thought you guys were a Chicago band because you have so much Chicago stuff in your songs. And I'm like, it's less than you think.
Still, yes, we love Chicago. Yeah. We do love Chicago.
What about September Again? That's another song that I've played a lot and that I think has done very well for you guys so far.
Yeah. It comes from kind of dwelling on the idea that wondering whether as I'm getting older, I'm becoming a kind of worse, lazier version of myself. It feels like I used to just on a whim, like pick up Crime and Punishment and read the whole thing. And now it's like I'd really have to like force myself to engage so deeply with things, which is still something that I am actively trying to do, but I feel like there's just this sort of like negative momentum as time passes where I feel like I start to just like settle more. And so the song's about sort of struggling with that and like what aspects of it you can be at peace with and what aspects of it are sort of terrifying. And so, yeah, the song is just another year passing, and yet here I am still going through the same things instead of finding new things to learn about and read and explore.
What were your lives like the last year and a half, locked in your apartment?
Actually, I feel like this past year had kind of the opposite effect for me and for some people that are very close to me. Like, I wrote some of my first songs over the course of the pandemic and put them out because, you know, we're sitting at home with all of these synthesizers around, and it's like, well, what am I doing sitting on the couch watching Survivor season 40? Like, let me do something creative and try something new. My mom, who, you know, she's 50, she would probably hate that I'm saying this out loud, outing her like that, but she like picked up the guitar and learned how to play guitar and like really got into painting and like makes these gorgeous paintings. And it's like all of these like new adventures in personal growth were activated by being stuck at home and forced to like stop socializing and stop, you know, going to work and coming home and watching TV and going to sleep, doing that same repetitive routine. It's good to break out of it.
Well, it's been great having you here. Is there anything, as you guys do interviews, is there anything that you'd love to talk about that nobody ever asks you? Anything you're passionate about? Anything you'd like to still cover?
Very, very interesting question.
I don't know. Yeah, I am blanking.
You'll think of everything like 10 minutes from now. We should have brought this up, right?
I'll be like, oh, if only I had thought to make him ask me about blank.
I still can't find it.
I thought that was going to do it for me.
No, but it's really nice. Like, the press cycle for this album has been so different from, you know, the first album, which we didn't get to go touring around meeting people. So, like, getting to know what it's like to be interviewed on a regular basis, and it's very exciting. You know, people have new and interesting questions every night, and I'm shocked, honestly, and it's like, it's really fun. It's a lot more fun than people sometimes make it out to be. So I've been enjoying it. I'll come up with something later, though.
I was saying earlier, this is my first interview in 3 years. Not even 2 years, but three. Hey, I wish you guys great the rest of the tour.
Thank you. The album
release. You're coming to L.A. You've already sold out one show in L.A. You had to add a second at the Lodge Room and out in Highland Park, which is a cool area, by the way.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
That's kind of the up-and-coming. As Echo Park becomes more and more gentrified, all the hipsters are going out to Highland Park, which is where the Lodge Room is.
Yeah.
You find the same thing in New York? Like, you take the neighborhoods in Brooklyn that everybody's been talking about for years, and they get so expensive.
Yeah.
So the musicians have to move to other neighborhoods, right?
Yeah.
Same thing?
It always scooches a little bit further out from whatever new epicenter there is.
Yeah, although there was an interesting thing in the pandemic where in a lot of those neighborhoods that have gentrified so much, people had the money to, like, move, you know, upstate or somewhere else. And so there was a moment where we were looking at moving out of our apartment, and suddenly there were all these apartments in Williamsburg that were open for much cheaper than they would have ever been before.
Oh,
because
yeah.
There was just no one renting apartments up there anymore.
That's over.
Yeah, now that's over.
I think we're seeing the same in L.A. That's all over with now. It's great. Well, hey, all the best. It's really been great to see your show, to meet you, to be playing you guys on my shows, on my podcast. Good luck, and I look forward to seeing you guys again soon.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. We're grateful.
All right, take care.
Their album, A Way Forward, and of course you can hear it in its entirety wherever you like to check out your stuff, including Spotify, of course. Thanks to Ian, Aiden, and Michael. And thanks to you for coming to check this out. Raves Indie Radar is all new indie music, and I drop a new episode every Friday morning looking at 20 minutes worth of the most important music of the week, so I hope you can come and make it a habit. Until then, you gotta keep raving on.